And good morning, everyone. You are listening to the podcast, The Leaves of a Victim Nevermore, with Stephen Wilson. I am Stephen Wilson, and I am a drug user, and I am a survivor of childhood sex abuse. This podcast is for individuals who identify as a victim of abuse or have dealt with addiction of any kind. Today's reading comes from someone that I hold dear, and it says a great deal about me, but there are many things about his work and his philosophy, his way of life, that I have tried to emulate as much as I possibly could. I know that he's not the standard issue fan favorite, but he has played a significant role in my life. Excuse me. Allergies are creeping on me. Okay. I'm talking about the Marquis de Sade. And today's reading is going to be taken from a letter written by the Marquis, sent to his wife. My manner of thinking, so you say, cannot be approved. Do you suppose I care? A poor fool indeed is he who adopts a manner of thinking for others. My manner of thinking stems straight from my considered reflections. It holds with my existence, with the way that I am made. It is not in my power to alter it, and were it, I'd not do so. This manner of thinking you find fault with is my sole consolation in life. It alleviates all my sufferings in prison. It composes all my pleasures in the world outside. It is dearer to me than life itself. Not my manner of thinking, but the manner of thinking of others has been the source of my unhappiness. The reasoning man who scorns the prejudices of simpletons necessarily becomes the enemy of simpletons. He must expect as much and laugh at the inevitable. A traveler journeys along a fine road. It has been strewn with traps. He falls into one. Do you say it is a traveler's fault, or that of the scoundrel who lays the traps? If then, as you tell me, they are willing to restore my liberty, if I am willing to pay for it by the sacrifice of my principles or to my tastes, we may bid one another an eternal adieu. For rather than part with those, I would sacrifice 1,000 lives and 1,000 liberties if I had them. These principles and these tastes, I am their fanatic adherent. And fanaticism is the product of my persecutions I have endured from my tyrants. The longer they continue their vexations, the deeper they root my principles in my heart. And I openly declare that no one need ever talk to me of liberty if it is offered to me only in return for their destructions. That was a letter written to the wife. The letter was written by the Marquis de Sade to his wife. Now, I'm not really going to get into great detail about why it is that I have an affinity for the Marquis de Sade, but this episode is going to be about timing. Now, the reason that I bring up the Marquis isn't really that I want to propose my own personal philosophy on any of you, although I could. I mean, this is my pulpit, so it doesn't really matter. But it is considered to be the timing of the things that we do. And moreover, the concept of healing itself. Now, this is something that plays a role in my life because I still go to group therapy for adult survivors of childhood sex abuse. And it seems to me that it's going to be an ongoing process, and Every now and again, the idea comes to me that I'm as healed as I'm going to be. I can't really go forward. I can always go back, which is what I've chosen to do. I know that there are people that have made it clear that they don't really appreciate the fact that I have openly told people that I've gone back to drug use. But I'm not really concerned about the language game between us. What is a drug? What is a pharmaceutical? What is a therapy? What is a way of life? This episode is about timing, and there may be more based on this topic, I don't know. But the concept always seemed foreign to me, even when I was in college. I mean, obviously it was approachable. I mean, it was right there in front of me. And when I did my internships and there in Putnam County and Knox and Davidson, having access to people that, far beyond the dossiers or the case studies, they're right there in front of you. These are real people. But even then, the idea, when do you stop therapy? When do you stop taking the Valium? When do you stop taking the sleeping medication they give you? Because it is a medication pyramid. And they always tell you that the illness itself, whatever it is you're suffering from, it's got to be hit by multiple angles. It has to be strategic. Everybody has to be all in. And I think maybe, especially in regards to the people at St. Mary's, they were just doing their job. It always seemed a bit cheesy. Because I wasn't really sure, even when I was in school, when I was the one listening and observing, who am I to tell these people their time is up? You're all better. Trust me. Go home. Live your life. La-di-da. One of the guys in group, he had taken off for a while, and he came back. He was worried because in about a week or so, in America, we're going to celebrate the birth of our nation, July 4th. And he always mentioned the idea that it was always a big family thing. And everybody knew what he was talking about. The idea that the family has to deal with what you're doing, or if you've told people, or if somebody's outed you. I always found that, and that analogy that the Marquis about the road and falling into a trap. Because there are times when therapy feels like a trap. And it doesn't matter that you've got the skill set to get out of the trap. It doesn't matter that perhaps maybe you have the ability to identify a trap before you get to it. What if you walk into it, even if you know it's there? You did it to yourself. Because the concept of healing, I mean, the timing of it, I always believe when anybody asks me, when should I do something, I always tell people right now, because all you have is right now. I'm not a cynic, but I've been in this life a long time, and I have had a great deal of experience, and unfortunately, it hit me early on in life that tomorrow is not guaranteed. It's a cliche because it's true. I know that in itself it is cheesy, but it's got teeth. And the reality will hit you that when should I do something? It doesn't matter if it's big or small. I mean, you are your own metric. But in regards to timing, that analogy of the marquee about the traveler is like, I mean, in a way, we're always traveling. We're always going, we're always moving on. But you get into that concept of healing, and I mean, it is a slippery slope. I mean, I'm not a big fan of morality, but I think that it does play a role in the way that you approach therapy. If you don't really fundamentally understand what it is to heal, then how will you know that you're there? When I was in school, everything was so obtuse. It was like, well, it'll just happen. It'll be organic. Well, how can something be organic if the entire process is strategically outlined? How do you feel today? What happened? How are you feeling? How does that make you feel? What happened today? What happened this weekend? Because there are times when I don't attend, and I don't feel guilty about it. And they always tell you that you get out of therapy what you put into it. But the road is hard. And it's not that I care anymore about who's laying the traps. I walk into them whether they're there or not. The traps are part of the road. Some of the potholes, they're big enough to put a coffin in. Others, they're just a little bit of a hiccup. They're not going to blow the tire. They're not going to get the vehicle out of alignment. But you get wore out. At least I do. Maybe I shouldn't generalize. Okay, I get tired of therapy. And people have been telling me this. I mean, I remember my mentor in school. Steven, you know, you're too smart for your own good. Sometimes you just gotta let things happen. But the Marquis doesn't apologize in that letter, because he doesn't think that he's offended. And I am an egomaniac, and the fact is, I don't feel like I've offended. But when I go to therapy, when I attend and I listen and I engage, I participate whenever I feel the need, it's always about this idea of getting better at what I am. For those few people that actually know me, they know that I'm not very good. And it's not that I have the right to keep blaming the teacher. Because the fact is that if it hadn't been for therapy, I would not be revisiting seventh grade, and I would not be going back to those things that happened. I wouldn't need to use drugs. I wouldn't have to go into escapism the way that I have. But you want me to talk about it. You want me to express myself. What happened today, Stephen? How are you feeling today? I know that most of it is for show, because I used it myself. And the irony is not lost on me. I would like to be outflanked. I would like somebody to surprise me. But the fact is, the human is not a mystery. None of you are original. I can see you coming 10,000 miles away. And you're always trying to be clever. And you tell me that you want me to be happy. And you want me to get better. You want me to stop using? Well, I'm a suicide, so I've tried to stop living. But you keep bringing me back. And that offends me. It's not in the brochure, they don't tell you in school. But when you survive a suicide attempt, and mine were not cries for help, I wanted to leave. You have to sit there and you have to start dealing with people saying, "We're really glad that you're here. These people don't know me." But these are the things you tell people when they're in crisis, when they're going through a psychosis or something similar to it. Everybody wants to be seen as being kind and generous, but they're just being paid to do so. Out of all the atrocities of humanity, my past belongs to me, and I would not have anybody go through it. I see the guys on the screen. I see them face to face. I hear their voice. We are all kindred spirits. We were all violated. And theoretically, that makes everything better. If one of us heals, we all heal. We all get a little bit better. And tomorrow is going to be better, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. Well, that's great. I mean, it sounds good in voice, and write it down on a piece of paper. Super. Everybody's super. Everybody's fine. Well, I still stand by my philosophy. I still believe that if you want to do something, the time is now. There is no reason for you to become enamored with prevention. You are neither intellectually superior nor a fool. The road has traps. But the only thing that should really frighten you is if you're not on the road, if you're not going anywhere. That should frighten you. Your dreams, your nightmares, your goals, your aspirations, your appetites. These things, they need to be played out. You need to be on the road. You need to be in the game. There's nothing wrong with being a voyeur. But at some point in time, you have to get out there and do it. And this always comes in the language game. You get out of therapy what you put into it. I always found it somewhat comical when a therapist or a moderator or a psychologist would say, "Low bridge." Well, not for me. I build them and I destroy them equally. And I enjoy the action. I know that I am critical on some things and I glaze over on others. But it is tiresome. Everybody believes that there needs to be some kind of mutualism, that we need to come together. We can heal as a group. Or maybe now, as an American, maybe we need to heal as a country, which I think is total bullshit. I will always adhere to Emma Goldman. I know that people think anarchy is pie in the sky, but it is not idle that I take individual liberty as seriously as I do philosophy. To me, they're one and the same. To live a life without asking permission, that's something that we should all give ourselves to. It's worth fighting for. But can therapy get me there? When I was in school, I was told that group therapy, even at its lowest point, it still helps people not feel so alone. People that are drinkers, people that take drugs, people that have been raped, people that have been beaten, people that are sex addicts, people that are addicted to gambling. Everybody in that circle, everybody there in that group, everybody theoretically has been through the same thing. We all survived cancer. Let us come together and heal, because tomorrow will be better. I don't think that healing should belong to the outworld, because in a way, you are asking permission to be forgiven for being broken, for being an addict, for being a victim, for being a survivor. I mean, it's a little bit Herbert Spencer, but you still have to answer the question, what are you trying to survive? Because that's part of the healing. And that is always beyond me, I think. As smart as I am, it always seems to be just beyond my fingertips. There for a while, I thought, if I just stop reaching for it, it'll just come to me. A little bit of game theory. Turn my head away and just let it creep up on my shoulder. Try to sneak in. When do you start therapy? When do you end therapy? When do you start your trip? When do you stop? Go by the wayside and rest your feet. Lay your head down. Let the purple hue of the sun set upon you. Pull your jacket over. Snuggle into the grass. And rest your eyes. Go to sleep. And try to dream. What will tomorrow bring? Go to sleep. That is how I feel. A traveler in the outworld. I know I should stay in. And I do go back and forth. But what if I left the bridge alone? If I didn't destroy it, would you follow? Do you want to know? Do you really want to know? Well, there's a price for that kind of information. What will you do with that information? You want to know what it feels like. You want to know what it is to go to the toilet and have blood in your anus. You want to have nightmares decades after it happened. You become numb. And then somebody restarts your heart, and everything starts all over again. What happened, Stephen? How do you feel today? Well, that is how I feel. Well, that's all I have for today. I may stick with this topic, I don't know. You have been listening to the podcast The Leaves of a Victim Nevermore with Stephen Wilson. My name is Stephen Wilson. May you be a blessing, and may you find serenity.